Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Another edition of the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, my really good friend Taylor Zarzer. He is part of ESPN, part of the SEC Network. He will be in Oxford this weekend for South Carolina at Ole Miss. We talk about that game. We talk about his Boston Red Sox. We kind of go around the SEC a little bit. Can anyone beat Alabama? What's going to happen at Auburn? His thoughts on South Carolina, his thoughts on Ole Miss, his thoughts on the Missouri-Kentucky game from a week ago that he called. We talk about that and a lot of other things with Taylor here on today's show. Before we get into that, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal. It's Highway 6 West in Oxford. You can either go there or you can call Landshark Delivery and have Landshark deliver Oxford Crystal to you at certain times. And when Landshark's not doing it, you can go to Oxford Crystal and get everything that you want, which right now should include the maple bourbon shake. It's fantastic. It's delicious. It's legal in all 50 states. You can still get the three-egg plate combo featuring the Gold Peak coffee. You can still get those $2, $3, $4 crystal square meals and the 12 crystal combo, 12 crystals, two medium fries, two medium drinks as you get ready for another big football weekend. Coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio, Clark Ford in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for, and then send him give him a call, 662-257-1900. He'll send you a quote via email within 15 minutes, right to the bottom line, no haggle, no hassle, and you take it from there. You can use that quote and shop it around, or you can do what I did, and that is let Clark Ford take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. You get a great Ford product, great service after the sale. Corey wants to be your car guy. He wants to be your truck guy. He'll prove that to you. 662-257-1900. Tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the podcast, and you'll save $500 off the already great bottom line Clark Ford in Amory. This podcast also brought to you by LB's Meat Market, 662-259-2999, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford. It's over there across from Kroger, Freshest Cuts in Oxford. It's the place to go. It's fantastic, whether you're looking for the bone-in ribeye, whether you're looking for pork, for chicken, for shrimp, seafood straight from the Gulf. LB's has it. Sausages, chicken sausage, pork sausage, the ribeye sausage, big favorite in my house. Also, the summer sausage. Go in. There's a beer fridge right there on your left. Grab six. Make it a six-pack of your own. Tell Greg that you heard about LB's on the Beer Garden, and that six-pack will be just $6. At LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford. This podcast is also brought to you by Community Mortgage. It's located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All of the underwriting and the processing is done in Memphis, so you are getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's also the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. So ask Jason about Community Mortgage's float-down option. It allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. Send Jason Lowe an email, jlowe, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. And we're brought to you by Strategic Partners and Media. SPM is a full-service advertising agency. It works with businesses of all types, big or small, Fortune 500 companies to startups. SPM can help your advertising needs for TV, radio, print, and every facet of social and digital media. Look, here's why SPM is really good and different than other ad firms. They handle everything in-house. They don't sub their work out. The writing, the production, the editing is done solely by their staff and crafted uniquely for their clients. And lastly, an Ole Miss grad and Mississippian is a partner in the firm, so give them a call and see just how great they are. It's Austin at Strategic Partners Media. BeerGardenPresentedByOxfordCrystal.com. So without further ado, let's get right to this interview with Taylor Zarzer of ESPN and the SEC Network. Talk some SEC football and, of course, about Taylor's beloved Red Sox on the heels of their fourth world title since 2004. Here's Taylor Zarzer. All right, Taylor, really appreciate the time. Got you for about a half hour, so I'll get right to it. Your Red Sox win another title. If I had told you back on the night that Aaron Effin Boone hit the home run in 2003 that the Red Sox would win four titles in the next 15 years, would you have believed me, or would you just thought I was being cruel?
The latter, and you and I were sitting in some sort of horse trailer on that dirt that next morning.
Yeah.
That next day.
Yeah.
We were, you know, pimping some car dealership, which was different from the car dealership we were at the day before or the one we were at the next day.
We were pimping a car dealership that 3 years later would not 3 years. How long was it? It was 4 years later would work to get me fired. So, yeah, it was one of those deals.
My favorite line, by the way, is you said, like, during commercial breaks, you would say, hey, remember that car dealership we were telling you to go to yesterday? Yeah, we were lying. Go here today.
Yeah, don't go there. That come here.
And then that night, you, of course, had your heart torn out. We did. That was an awful experience 15 years ago. No, there's no way I would have thought that. Grady Little gets fired. Terry Francona comes in, does a great job for 8 years. But what Alex Cora just achieved, it's the greatest team in Red Sox history. Clearly, the rest of the country wasn't as enthusiastic about it as I was. The ratings for the Cubs Indians 2 years ago was extraordinary. The ratings last year for the Astros Dodgers was great. Those were seven-game series. I guess there was kind of like an Alabama-type element to this where people said, well, the Red Sox are just too good. But they were. It's amazing, man. I mean, the chemistry on that team, the selflessness that this team had, didn't care, you know, never, ever, no one ever complained about how much or little they were playing. Brock Holt hits for the cycle, and he's on the bench the next day. I mean, it was crazy how they all sacrificed for the team this year and how talented they were. I think the thing that was surprising to me, Neil, though, was David Price and Joe Kelly. I mean, both of those guys were – David Price was terrible in every big moment, especially against the Yankees, and Joe Kelly just
simply couldn't pitch going into the postseason, and there was a lot of controversy about him being on the roster. So those were surprising parts, but this one was, without any question, the best team. Let's just hope they don't sell one of their players to the Yankees to put a play on like they did 100 years ago at this time and stop winning championships.
Yeah, I don't think that's likely. I told 12-year-old Carson McCrady all summer as he got frustrated with the Cubs when they couldn't score runs. I was like, man, look, I get it, but it doesn't matter that no one's beating the Red Sox. And he would be like, Dad, anybody can beat anybody. I'm like, nah, nobody's beating the Red Sox. Don't worry about it. Focus on Bryce Harper. So 12-year-old Carson McCrady, who was the one that walked up to Theo Epstein at the Cubs convention last year and said, when can I get my Harper jersey, is on complete Bryce Harper watch right now.
And There we go.
I'm not sure that's going to work out real well, but I'm not going to be the one that tells him. I'll let Theo tell him.
There's a real chance.
Yeah. Theo's good. We'll see whether they do that or not. All right, let's talk some football before people get mad at me. You've been all over the league this year. I know you've seen South Carolina some. You're going to be here in Oxford on Saturday for Ole Miss and South Carolina, 11 o'clock. South Carolina's one of those weird teams, man. I mean, I thought they'd be better than this. They're not bad. They're not good. They're just kind of there. You've seen them and know them better than me. What do you expect from them on Saturday?
Yeah, first of all, if you ask me questions for Ole Miss, I'm going to tell you to respond to your own questions because I've only seen them from afar this year. I think Tom is a good quarterback. Shame what happened to Metcalf, because I think that guy's going to make eight figures a year at some point in the next few years. Their defense is a mess, and we can get to them in a minute. But, Neil, this is the fifth South Carolina game I've called this year.
This is the game. And I called five of them. And we're in the notes. I mean, it's crazy how much we have seen the Gamecocks. Will Muschamp is really tired of us. Doesn't have anything against us, but is just really, really tired of us. Here's what I would say. They're not an incredibly talented football team. The last couple of years, South Carolina should have won 2 years ago. If you look at if you watched them play in 2016 or looked at the stats, you'd say that's a four-win team, and they won six games. Last year, I would have said they looked like a five-win team, and they won nine games. The turnover margin was outstanding. They don't commit penalties. They don't have any of the things that almost every team has, which is infighting or some kid whose parents are upset wanting to transfer. They don't have any of that. And I think that is one of the reasons why they have seemed to maximize their win totals the last couple of years. The big difference this year is they're minus six in turnovers. They're not as smart. They're not playing as smart a football as they have been the last couple of years, but they still don't have any turmoil inside the program, and it's been an issue the last couple of years. They're thin on defense. Their front is good. DJ Wanham is their best defensive lineman. He's missed almost all of the season. He played in the first game, and he just played in this last game, and wreaked havoc on Tennessee. He had a couple of sacks in the game. Watch out for him. He makes their pass rush. He changes everything with him on the front. They've got one kid in the secondary named J.C. Horn, who's Joe Horn's son, who is going to be a big-time SEC player. He's already, I think, their best defensive back, and he's a true freshman. Their linebackers are okay. They're not great. They struggle to make tackles. A lot of times you will see opposing running backs get to the second level on this defense. But I say all of that to tell you that the biggest story is Jake Bentley. Jake Bentley is so scrutinized by the fans. But part of the problem is the South Carolina's arch rival Clemson is going through the greatest stretch they've ever played in football right now. And, you know, Jake Bentley is a South Carolina kid. Yes, he finished his high school career in Opelika, Alabama, but he's a South Carolina kid. His dad was a legendary South Carolina high school coach who's now the running backs coach. And they are expecting more from him. He's too much of a gambler sometimes on the field, but I think a lot of the scrutiny has been unwarranted. They don't have great running backs. They don't have a great defense. This is a program that still Will Muschamp is trying to transition into one that is a contender in the SEC East. Steve Spurrier stopped recruiting the last couple of years. He was there. So you get what you get. I think Bentley's a good, solid college quarterback. It probably takes too many chances, but ultimately, we'll probably give the Gamecocks a really good chance to win the game on Saturday. And then the last thing I'll say is Debo Samuel is outstanding. If you've never seen this guy play, I know it's been a long time since these two schools played, while you'll cheer against him, no matter what, you can't kick him to football, ever, on a kick return or a punt return for that matter. But he is a really special talent. He is filled out into his body as he's been healthy this year, and I think will be a great player at the next level. So, you know, they're a middle of the road SEC team that's probably going to end up 6-6, 7-5. They have one less game. I think they want to add a game on December the 1st. Not sure if they're going to be able to do that. So I guess they'll be a 6-5, 7-4 type team at the end of the year. But Muschamp is trying as hard as he possibly can to recruit Georgia, Tennessee, North Carolina, you know, that surrounding area, and get this program to the next level. But right now, they're just kind of one of those middle-of-the-road SEC teams.
Yeah, I mean, you've been around them a bunch. And you've been around the league a bunch, too, and you've lived in the Carolinas for a long time. I know Spurrier kind of did it, sort of. Can you turn South Carolina into an elite program in the current landscape where Georgia's really, really good? And like you mentioned, Clemson's a national power, and, you know, Florida's – with Mullen, I think Florida's going to be better. who knows what Pruitt does at Tennessee. Is there even room for South Carolina to take that next step?
Probably not, just to be completely honest, with everything that's going on now. I mean, if you look back to when Spurrier had those 11-win seasons, Clemson wasn't nearly as good. That was also combined with the greatest stretch of high school talent that has ever come through the state of South Carolina, which it's a really small state, which traditionally does not have excellent high school football. But Clowney, Lattimore, Gilmore, all these guys that ended up playing the National Football League or without a gruesome injury would have played for a long time in the NFL. And why, Neil, can't I think of that wide receiver that was so good that played with Steven Garcia? But they had
– Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about. I can't think of his name either now.
They had four or five guys that were outstanding South Carolina high school football players that are just – you just rarely find. And Clemson has become a national brand that is recruiting all over Florida. I mean, they're going into New Jersey. They're going into the – like the Penn – they're recruiting against Penn State for players. They've gone everywhere. And, you know, with Dabo being – having what is without – any doubt the best stretch Clemson's ever gone through, now that makes it more difficult. You combine that with Georgia, who's recruiting better than anyone in college football, it's hard for South Carolina to find their footing at near the top of the sport and be a top 15 caliber program. You would think one of those two programs would have to slip. Something would have to happen. Dabo Swinney would have to leave Clemson, or Kirby Smart would have to leave Georgia, or something off the field would have to happen in order for them to get to that level. And look, I know that sounds kind of harsh, but find me a time where South Carolina, Clemson, and Georgia have all been great at the same time. It's just never happened. Now, having said that, I think Muschamp's doing a solid job of trying to rebuild this program and get it to the next level. Their facilities aren't great, but they're changing that. They'll open a new football facility next year. So they're working on the facilities now. Stadium is a great atmosphere for college football. But I do. I think that their ceiling is probably 8, maybe 9 wins right now, as good as Georgia and Clemson are.
Yeah, I agree completely. All right. We got about 18 minutes left with you, and I want to spin forward in a minute, but I can't yet, because I listened to your call. I watched your call of Kentucky and Missouri the other day in Columbia. I was in Ruston. I was there for my 30th high school reunion. I was a little buzzed in a hotel room, and I thought the game was done, man. And all of a sudden, and I'm kind of trying to take a nap, if you want to know the truth, and I had the game on, and I'm hearing your voice inflection change. I'm like, what is he talking about? This game's over. And then they punt to the kid at Kentucky. I don't know why they punted to him. And he runs it back for a touchdown, and you're like, it's a game and all that stuff. So here's my question in a nutshell. What the hell happened to Missouri in the fourth quarter of that game? I mean, that is just – it was inexcusable to lose that football game like that.
It really was. First of all, I'll tell you, Missouri didn't get a first down in the second half. 8 possessions, 8 3-and-outs.
It's unbelievable.
With the second or third best quarterback in school history. If you want to say Chase Daniel is their best, Drew Locke is second or third, and didn't get a first down. Play calling was suspect. Their ground game, they got 3 different running backs that are really good, and they didn't use them nearly as much as they should have in that second half. So that's the first thing that I would question. And Derek Dooley, who's the offensive coordinator there, everybody remembers, at Tennessee, and ironically used to be in Ruston, Louisiana. He's receiving a lot of heat for the way that game went in the second half on Saturday. But the other part of it, the controversy with the pass interference call, and then the tight end C.J. Conrad pushing off, you know, to get that touchdown. I don't have nearly as much problem with it as some others would say. Maybe you swallow your whistle on what was called pass interference. The next play, you see a tight end inside 5 yards make that kind of move on the defender trying to establish their position on almost every single play. So I didn't really have an issue with that, but it's inexcusable that Missouri lost the game. It really is. Kentucky couldn't do anything offensively for 58 minutes. Benny Snell was bottled up. Their quarterback, Terry Wilson, was far from mediocre until that last drive. Give him credit for the way he led his team down the field once it became a one-score game, but it was shocking. And now here they are against Georgia playing for the SEC East Championship on Saturday, and who knows? I mean, you would think based off of what you just
saw. No way, right?
They have no, there's no way, right? But now they believe that they can win the SEC Championship. Benny Snell has to be this weekend in order for that to happen. But, yeah, that is all on Missouri. It all is. And I'll tell you, Barry Odom is one of the best people to be around, Neil. He's genuine. He's a straight shooter. I really enjoyed spending some time with him. But it's inexcusable that they lost to South Carolina in that monsoon. Maybe I'm the kiss of death. And then they also lost this game to Kentucky, and they don't have a conference win. With Drew Locke at quarterback, they don't have a conference win. That's crazy.
You don't think Kentucky beats Georgia, right?
I don't. But I do. I will say this. I thought that Georgia's game plan against LSU was rather flawed. And, you know, if they come out there trying to swing it all around the line against Kentucky, that would be a big mistake. Josh Allen, now let me say this. Kentucky's defense is outstanding. One of the number one in the country in scoring defense. They are top 10 good, Kentucky, on defense this year. It's crazy to think that Ole Miss beat them last year in Lexington. Secondary was so bad. I'm telling you, big improvement. Josh Allen is going to make a lot of money at the next level, their pass rusher. But so if Georgia does not stick with the running game and tries to turn Fromm into a guy who's throwing, 40-plus passes in the game, maybe Kentucky has a chance. But, no, I'm picking the dog.
All right, the other big game, obviously, is in Tuscaloosa. I know people have tried to hype it. I'll actually give ESPN and CBS some credit this year. They've not tried to just overhype it like they have in the past. At least if they have, I've missed it, which might tell you that I don't watch much television anymore. I'll be honest. I saw LSU in Baton Rouge earlier in the year, and I give Ed Orgeron credit. He's done a great job there, much more than I thought he would. They're better than I thought they'd be. I don't think they have a chance in hell of beating Alabama on Saturday. I don't think they have a chance of covering the line. I'd lay 14. I might lay 24. That's how much I think this is going to be a blowout. Am I crazy?
No. Well, here's the only thing I would say is that I don't think Alabama's defense is great, compared to what we've seen in the last handful of years. You've watched them every year. I don't think this defense is great. I think, part of the problem is that Ole Miss game was just a train wreck the last 59 minutes. So you didn't really get a chance to see how good they were. But they've lost so many guys to the league that maybe we'll see them in a hostile environment stub their toe. I don't think their front seven is as strong as it's been. Their secondary is inexperienced. So maybe LSU is able to establish the run against them. But how in the world is anybody going to slow down this offense? And Joe Burrow and LSU are going to match –
No way.
Point.
No way. They're too one-dimensional. Yeah. Here's the thing. To beat Alabama, you've got to score minimum of 35 points to even think about it. To beat Alabama realistically, you've got to have 5 to 6 drives that keep Tua off the field. And look, is Alabama's defense as good as some of the Saban defenses? No, but it's not as bad as people are making it out to be. As I've been saying all year, when you're ahead, if you ever played football at all, if you ever played any defense at all, and I played some badly, and I'm using this as an example, your level of intensity on defense is different. They're human beings at Alabama. I don't care what anybody says. Your level of intensity is different when you're up 28-0 than it is when it's nothing to nothing.
No doubt.
And so I don't know. I mean, are they great? No, they're not a great defense. On a 1-10, they're a 7.5 or something. But they're better than they get credit for. And when they've had to play well, they've played well.
Do you know what Dylan Moses said to me? I did one of their games a few weeks ago against the Raging Cajuns, which was a real barn burner. Dylan Moses on Friday, Neil, I said, well, Matt Stinchcomb, actually, my partner, said, so if game day is a 10, what is practice? He said, no. Moses interrupts him and says, game day's a 6, man. Tuesday's a 10. He said, Tuesday is the best game in college football. He goes, that no one gets to see. When we play against our offense, that's the best game in college football. We've arrived at a point in 2018 where Alabama football players are more fired up to practice against each other on a Tuesday than play on a Saturday. Now, I have to think that'll be different in Baton Rouge on this Saturday. But so far this year, I believe it. Like, watching them play, I really do. I think they're more geared up for Tuesday practice than they are to play against the opposition they've seen so far this season.
I mean,
pretty crazy.
Yeah, normally you'd scoff at something like that, but I completely buy it. I mean, they're so significantly better than everyone else. Is there? You've seen a lot of other teams. I know you're almost exclusively SEC, but you talk to a lot of people. You see a lot of people. Is there a team out there that on a given day can beat Alabama? See, I say there's not, but I've had people say, well, maybe Clemson, maybe Ohio State or whatnot. I don't think there's a team I've seen, but you know football better than I do. Is there a team out there that on a given day? And I don't mean the 8-9 turnover stuff. On a given day, play a real football game and beat Alabama.
If there is, it's Clemson or it's Oklahoma. It's not Ohio State. Ohio State is too one-dimensional on offense. They cannot establish the running game as much as they would like to. Their quarterback is awesome, Dwayne Haskins. I mean, he might be the first pick in the draft, really. At the end of the year, he's only a redshirt sophomore, and I don't think he was planning on going pro. But unless he's crazy, he will at the end of the season. But they're too one-dimensional. Kyler Murray, one of the most underreported stories of the year has been how fantastic he has been replacing the Heisman Trophy number one draft pick in Baker Mayfield. That offense is almost Alabama great. With the way that they're moving the football so far this year. But their defense is terrible. They've already fired their defensive coordinator, Mike Stoops, and replaced him with Ruffin McNeil. I mean, I think it would be a shootout with Alabama, and I think that Oklahoma would run out of bullets. But maybe, you know, they play 10 times, maybe they win once or twice. Clemson's the answer, Neil. I mean, Oklahoma, I think, could give Alabama a game. Clemson's the answer, though. Clemson... This Trevor Lawrence kid is the real deal. He's a true freshman. Their tailback, Travis Etienne, I think is the best in college football. He is built like Dalvin Cook was at Florida State a couple of years ago. Really good receivers. Their defensive line, I think, is the best in the game. Three of those guys will be first-round draft picks at the end of the season. If there is a weakness, I think it's their offensive line, and I do worry about them holding up four quarters against Alabama if we see that game for a fourth straight year. But that's the answer. I think most people would like the answer to be another team, right? You know, so we get something new. We've seen this movie before. You know, we'd like to see something new. But it is. The answer is still Clemson in 2018. But my biggest concern is someone that follows all of college football and hosts a daily show about it is that we're never going to get a great game with the top team in the country. And if that's the case, the casual fan isn't going to tune in. So I hope that's not the case and we get some good games that involve Alabama down the stretch of the season.
You just answered my question, but I'll kind of re-ask it in a different way because you're right. You deal with college football fans daily, around the country. There is clearly Alabama fatigue. It's not Alabama's fault, but there's Alabama fatigue. Is it approaching the point, in your opinion, where it's, and I'm being hyperbolic here, dangerous for the sport?
Yes, it is. It
we need them to be knocked off. It's one thing for them to play in great games as they had the last few years. I think the fact that Clemson beat them in a great game 2 years ago was great for the game. And the fact that they were in a great game that was decided in overtime, the quarterback comes off the bench and wins the game, being arrested by Nick Saban right now, was great last year. All those storylines were great. But if they win, and they win in a dominant way, then I do. I think that people will say, what's on Netflix? What, you know what I mean? Like, I don't.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think that they will be that fired up to watch college football. So at the end of the season, hopefully someone will knock them off or at least give them a great game. But if they don't, we're going to go into next season and people are going to say, I'm out. Unless somebody can stop this machine, I'm out for a while until I get something unpredictable.
Yeah, it's weird to look around the Southeast and you see empty seats where you didn't used to see empty seats.
Yeah. I think there's two problems here. I think it's the lack of drama at the top of the sport, and I think the other thing is the experience at home continues to get better and better.
Yeah.
I'll admit this, that if we expanded the playoff, the ratings in the postseason would be great. The people that are connected to the sport and the television partners and the corporate partners would all be very happy financially with the postseason. But, Neil, we have to be really mindful of the regular season. Vaught Hemingway Stadium is one of the best places to watch an American sporting event, and everything that happens in Oxford before, during, and after the game is what has made college football so special. And if suddenly people are like, there's not a whole lot on the line here, and we got 8 teams or 12 teams going to the postseason. I'm gonna stay at home. And maybe that wouldn't be the case in Oxford, but it's going to be the case in a lot of places across the country. The more teams you put into the postseason, if there's not a whole lot riding on the regular season, we don't play fantasy football in college. You know, like the Saints Vikings game on Sunday night, while they don't decide who's going to the postseason, I got Drew Brees tonight. I got Kirk Cousins tonight, starting against the Fighting Rustin McCrady's. You know,
yeah,
I got
sure.
to win this game. And there's another aspect involved in professional football. We don't have that. It's, man, this game, Georgia and Kentucky, decides who goes to Atlanta. Loser, season is basically over. It's a playoff game. And if you get rid of that, I do. I think that makes me concerned about how many people are experiencing college football during the regular season.
All right, last couple of things. I do a weekly podcast with Gabe DeArmond and J.G. Tate. Jay, as you know, covers Auburn and has for a long time, is very connected there. Jay said before the Auburn-Ole Miss game that if Auburn lost, and of course they didn't, but that if Auburn lost, he didn't think Gus Malzahn would survive the week. He came out with an item yesterday, I believe, about Gus Malzahn and that the people, capital P, who matter at Auburn, are done with him. They're through. He insists that Auburn and Gus Malzahn will part ways at the end of the season, barring a kind of a miraculous run for the Tigers. You've seen the Tigers. It's a twofold question. Is there a miraculous run in that team? And also along those lines, let's say Jay is right. Given the landscape today in the SEC West and what's happening at Alabama, how attractive is the Auburn job?
Man, that's something big right there. I mean, $30+ million to tell the guy to go home. I've never understood the marriage. It's a weird, it's an awkward fit. He doesn't make a lot of changes. This is my offense. This is what I ran at every level of football. It's what I'm going to run here, even if the players aren't best equipped to run it. This is what we're doing, which is why, to answer your first part, I think there are several more losses ahead. This A&M game this weekend is a swing game for them, but I don't think they're beating Georgia with that offense. I certainly don't think they're beating Alabama with that offense. I love their defense, by the way. I think Kevin Steele's doing a great job, but I would still say it's attractive. I know we keep saying this about Saban. He's turned 67 on Halloween.
I do. I think if you get the right guy there, that he could be very successful. So I would still say it's rather attractive, Neil. I mean, you have to, as you know, recruit against Alabama, recruit against Georgia, get into Florida. And with all these programs that are set up around them, you make a good point, which is the challenge is as significant as it's ever going to be. But I don't know that Will Muschamp, for example, would be their guy, but he would be the type of guy I could say would be like, you know what? I know everything about this program. I've been there a couple of times. I'd do it. You know, I think that there would be some interest from current successful head coaches for that job, but I guess I'm taken aback a bit just because that number is so big to make Gus Malzahn go home.
All right, last thing, and you're around the league some. We started with Ole Miss. We'll finish with Ole Miss. You're around the league. You talk to people, coaches, media, all sorts of stuff. What is the current perception of the Ole Miss program and of the job Matt Luke's doing?
I think that people think he's doing a fine job. I think there are two things. First, I would say that people, when they think of Ole Miss right now, if they think of Ole Miss right now, they think of a program in transition because of all that happened when Freeze was coaching there. And I say if they think of Ole Miss to lead to my second part, it's just not a big story right now. And it's a shame. And I was thinking about this preparing for the game a few days ago. I mean, Ole Miss is a team that went to the New Year's Six in consecutive seasons and, you know, beat Alabama in consecutive seasons and was such a huge part of the Southeastern Conference landscape and the country for that matter, when you thought of the best teams in America. And now they are. They're kind of off the grid. I don't think that lasts forever, though. I do, you know, next few years, we'll find out how crippling this period has been for Ole Miss and how long it takes them to dig out of it. But it's a shame because I do think that the fan base cares so much about the football program and cares so much about a football Saturday that it's one of the things that we do need to talk more about if you love college football and if you care about the entire game as I do. But you don't hear much chatter this year about the Rebels, and I think that has everything to do with the transition they're going through.
Well, my man, I look forward to seeing you. When you get to town Friday, holler at me.
You know it. I will do it.
Okay. Talk to you soon. Enjoy your speaking engagement here in a minute, and I look forward to seeing you this weekend.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Our thanks to Taylor for his time on the show today. That does it for today's Beer Garden, presented by Oxford Crystal. Don't forget to try that maple bourbon shake. It's fantastic. You'll love it. Also, we'll be back sometime next week working on an NFL podcast, an NBA podcast, talk some baseball free agency, have a lot of irons in the fire. So we'll see kind of what hits. Need to visit with Ryan Brown again soon, too, to talk some college football as we get closer and closer to the big rivalry weekends and the postseason picture. So we'll touch on some of those things next week on the Beer Garden. Until then, thanks for listening. Take care. Have a great weekend.